This is going to be kind of awkward, don't you think?
What do you mean?
We have a guest today.
I know. Yeah. It's exciting.
Welcome back, everyone, to This Is Why We Watch Movies. I'm Brian J. Hutchins.
And I'm Landon Higgs.
And we are joined by a fellow MFA of mine.
Oh, you want me to say my name?
Yeah, say your name.
Hi. I'm Carlos.
Carlos who?
Carlos Batts.
There you go.
There we go.
So he is
with
in...
With a Z.
With a Z.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. He is a good friend of ours and also another film student here at UNCW. Today's movie was one of his recommendations. So I always start off the show by asking Landon how he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But today I want to know how you're doing.
I'm doing pretty well. You know, production is ramping up for the short film that we're shooting for our class. And kind of stressed out about that. But other than that, you know, mentally I'm doing pretty well. Mentally and physically. Everything's going right.
Excellent.
We like to hear that. We like to hear it. And Landon, how about yourself?
I am good. Busy. Yeah. Working on two different films for both of you. So.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all are keeping me busy.
I was hoping you'd do the bit about going to class and then showing up here. But
no, I decided not to.
That's upsetting.
But I did go to class and then showed up here, so.
I made a note on here that I was going to grab chocolate because there was candy in the office today, and I forgot. So, Carlos, this is not normally as hospitable as it is. Normally, there's chocolate for people.
I had a York before.
And you didn't bring it to share?
Wow. Well, here's the thing, though. I stole two of them from my office, right? But they had a huge basket full of just a bunch of, like, Milky Ways, Three Musketeers. And then the Yorks were there. And, of course, nobody likes mint chocolate. So
correct. I like mint chocolate.
Other than me, you know. Wow. You like mint chocolate?
I love mint chocolate, dude.
I wouldn't have taken it if you brought it.
Same with ice cream or no?
Yeah. Yeah, mint chip is great.
Yeah, mint chip is great.
Landon's out wiling over here. Mm-hmm.
Top three, bro, and it's not three or two.
Oh, you crazy.
That's insane.
That's the craziest thing.
I mean, I don't agree. It's not my favorite, but I do love it.
It's my favorite.
That might be the worst take this podcast has had so far.
Yeah, and I have a lot of bad takes.
Yeah.
So,
yours sucks.
And we're going to be hearing about some of those today, probably, in our review, which is of Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, which is Guy Ritchie's first feature film.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to go over the plot, like a little short synopsis?
I will do that, yeah.
Excellent. Dude. That is kind of your job.
Normally, but I did not even think about it today. Hold on.
Oof. Big oof.
All right. Eddie persuades his three pals to pool money for a vital poker game against a powerful local mobster, Hatchet Harry. Eddie loses, after which Harry gives him a week to pay back £500,000. That's where the film starts.
That's kind of crazy.
It is.
So to start with, I want to hear from Carlos. What is the first thing that you really like about this movie?
The first thing, I think it's going to be kind of an easy, like, kind of a basic answer, but my favorite is just the whole simultaneous, like, characters happening and, like, the story all at once and how they all unite at the end and, you know, it just comes crashing down. But I like the idea of having multiple characters having their own stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my first one was also crisscrossing storylines. I liked the attempt. I don't think that he handles it nearly as well here as he does in Snatch, but I still think that I enjoyed it for what it was, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think that the vibe of the movie was pretty fun. Like, it's a lighthearted film for the most part. You know, that's all I can really say on that. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and I appreciate that about it.
But you enjoyed it?
Well, we're not to that part yet.
Oh, you got to give him a minute.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I definitely think this is a fun movie.
Yeah. I'm not going to deny that. Yeah, maybe I just don't like having fun.
I have a really good time with it.
It's got some good laughs in it.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think it's as consistently funny as some of his other stuff, but, I mean, there is comedy in it, for sure.
Was this supposed to be funny?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that there's supposed to be some...
It's an, like, action comedy.
Yeah, I'd say it's... I don't know if, like, he went for, like, a full-on, like, you know, comedy, but I think that, like... There's definitely funny moments in there for sure.
Well, I believe you.
Wow, that's crazy.
Oh, God.
Just remember, Carlos, anything we say in here does not affect our friendship.
Oh, so I can just, like, shit on you for hating this movie or
you
something.
You can.
You can do that.
I'm not going to do that, though, because I respect everybody's opinions when it comes to movies.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what you got next?
What I think next? Of course, the soundtrack.
Okay,
yeah. That's my next one.
Absolutely,
payback. Yeah. You
It's a banging soundtrack.
James Brown. Guy Ritchie is the rock and roller king. So that's what he's known for in his soundtracks. His soundtracks have a lot of rock classics in them.
The soundtrack as well is like a through line through a lot of his work, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, it's always consistent, not just him, but also Matthew Vaughn, who I'm not going to separate because, you know, he produced this one. Really enjoyed that. I thought that the music was, like, a highlight of the movie.
I would agree with you on that as well.
Although, something that I kind of question whenever I see these, because I was watching an interview with him about this film, and he said the total budget they spent was $1.5 million in cash.
Yeah, it looks like it.
How do you, it definitely looks like that, but like clearing all of these songs that are on there.
Yeah.
Especially a James Brown song.
Right.
No shot, bro.
Mm-hmm. I know several directors that like have made movies and the only thing in the budget that held it up was the soundtrack, right? Mm-hmm. Like he was waiting for a $200,000 underwriter to just, not, sorry, $200,000 underwriter to like, help him buy the rights to the music so that the film could come out. Because he wasn't caving on the soundtrack.
I can respect that.
Yeah, this is 52577 by Patrick Reed Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, the only professional movie I have accredited in.
Yeah, that's true.
Fun fact.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I'm listed as a construction truck driver for the third unit special effects.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a mouthful.
And it was, my Tacoma.
Celebrity.
My Tacoma.
You know, Sting only made 25 quid off of that? Or 25,000 quid, I'm sorry, off of that.
You mean pounds?
No, it's quid.
Oh, my God.
They call it quid.
Anyways.
Yeah, anyways.
Whatever. Yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, I think we can all agree on the music. Like, that's just a
there's no
definable thing. Yeah. I'm not going to fight on that. I'm going to kick in on this one just because I feel it. One thing, and I kind of already said this in a different way. One thing I appreciate about this movie is you can see Ritchie and Vaughn's later work in it. In the same way that if you watch like Kubrick's first movie, you see later Kubrick. It's not as polished, but it's there. And the same with Nolan's early work. Like very clearly he had a vision and an idea that he wanted to execute. And I mean, maybe it could have been done better, but he didn't cave on a lot of it. And it feels very much so like a Guy Ritchie movie, even though it has some quirks to it, which we can get into later.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big reasons why I like it as much as I do is, yeah, you can definitely see Guy Ritchie's style in it. I think that there's things that he continues to do throughout future movies that he just has more money to do and that he can actually do what he's trying to. I think Snatch really is like, it's just this but better.
Yeah.
Like, in my opinion, I think he had all the resources he needed to actually do what he wanted.
I don't know if you saw, and you as well, Carlos, there's a TikTok clip of a French guy interviewing Christopher Nolan last year, but he asked, does more money make a movie better? And Nolan's response was, no, it just makes it easier to do what you're trying to do. And I think that that's 100% the case with Lockstock.
No, I agree with that. Especially with some of Guy Ritchie's most recent work. Like, he has the big blockbuster budgets now.
Oh, yeah.
But in my opinion, they've kind of let me down, and I'm a big Guy Ritchie fan. Like, I didn't watch King Arthur. I didn't like
it. Okay. I'm a defender of King Arthur.
I know you're a defender of
King Arthur. I like King Arthur.
I liked Aladdin.
I didn't hate Aladdin either.
Yeah.
But
you never had
a friend
like me.
I didn't even bother with Aladdin.
It's actually a pretty good movie. It's different enough from the original that I don't hate it.
But, like, is it his style, though?
Yeah. Parts of it, yes. Parts of it, no. I'd say it's closer to probably Sherlock Holmes in terms of, like, the tone, maybe.
See, I loved Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, those are good, too.
I love both of them.
Anyways.
They're making a third one with
Dexter Fletcher.
Who was actually in Lock, Stock, Smoking Barrels.
It's all just connecting.
The world is too small.
He was one of the characters.
Yeah.
The four guys.
So what else you got? You got any more pros?
Pros, the quick editing. I like a lot.
Okay, yeah.
And I guess editing would also go with the slow motion, I think. Because Guy Ritchie has this, whenever you watch his films, his slow motion shots are unlike any other slow motion you would watch in other films. And I've always wondered, like, the style, how he does that, how, like, what's the FPS that he shoots at. And it's extremely high, of course. I looked it up. I think he almost reaches to, like, the 800s which is insane.
Yeah, this guy's he's clearly out there doing crazy things. Yeah,
this guy's clearly not seen a Zack Snyder film.
No, clearly. Oh my God. You seen Justice League, bro?
Yes,
I that movie Jesus. Would be an hour shorter if there was no slow motion.
Yeah, they took the slow-mo out?
Yeah, no shit, bro. That's what it was, fucking 4 hours, dude. I was so pissed after the first 20 minutes of it.
Okay, are you talking about the Snyder Cut?
Yeah, the Snyder Cut.
Okay.
Because it's just...
Did you see the door? Did you see the door, Carlos?
I know you guys might have to leave. Huge Zack Snyder.
You have to get out.
Look, look, look.
I'm not a Zack Snyder fan.
No.
I'm a Zack Snyder DC fan.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
There's a big difference.
Look. Watchmen...
Top terrible.
Whoa.
I don't like Watchmen. I think it's boring.
Okay. I
but we're not talking about Watchmen right now.
Wait, hang on. Boring?
Yeah.
Okay, that's just an L take.
Watchmen is boring.
Yeah.
And you think the Snyder Cut was...
Fascinating. I watched it 3 times in 2 days. I love it.
Yeah, I love the Snyder Cut as well, but yeah. Also Watchmen is great.
And I think you're missing something. It's hyperbole.
Yeah, you're being obviously. Hyperbolic right now.
Yeah, I don't mind it, but I don't love it. It's not on any of my top 10 lists for anything.
It's one of the movies that actually made me love movies, I'll be honest.
I can see that, yeah.
That makes sense, seeing your work.
That and Scarface, but anyways.
Scarface, okay, all right. I get behind King. Some De Palma, yeah, I'm here for it.
Brian De Palma, baby.
But yeah, no, I think that the slow motion guy, going back to that, Guy Ritchie is always very intentional with it. And, you know, a lot of times it bothers me in movies when they do a slow motion sequence, but clearly it was shot in 24 FPS and it was a decision they made in post. Mm-hmm. So I love the fact that he plans out for that.
There's also that soundbite that they use. It's like a roar. Like, whenever, do you remember in Snatch, whenever Brad Pitt gets, like, knocked out?
Yeah.
He gets knocked out, and then he falls into the pool of water, or not the pool of water, into the pool.
Right.
And, like, you hear that roar. I mean, it happens in Lock, Stock.
I didn't even put that together, no. You didn't? No, I guess I missed it in this, but, no, I definitely know what you're talking about.
I haven't seen it in his most recent work, though.
Yeah, I didn't notice that at all. Yeah.
But in those two films, I did know.
Hmm. Yeah.
I actually have one more pro, like one major pro. Oops, sorry.
You always do that.
I know. I even like intentionally moved it so I wouldn't hit it that hard, and I did it anyway. I actually really enjoyed the characters in this. Like, they're all just absolute dickheads, but like, they're entertaining. Like, say what you want about them. I don't think they go through much of an arc, but they're at least fun. I had a good time with them at least.
Perhaps.
Do you want to go off of that, or do you want me to...
I'm going to hold off, because I don't really have much else to say in the positive section. I'm going to be honest.
I was actually going to lead that into the con.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead and do it.
Because with the characters, I mean, I do love his characters and, mm-hmm. like, his design, especially Vinnie Jones, an actor that he uses a lot.
Yeah.
Big Chris, and then in Snatch, I think his name was Bullet Tooth Tony. And mm-hmm. He was like this.
I love the name.
He was the same
character.
Thing.
Names
was,
go hard.
Yeah. Yeah, he was an assassin.
Bacon. Right? That was Bacon, Jason Statham's character's name.
I think in Snatch, what was his name in Snatch? It was something short like
yeah,
that.
It was
I know
something
his sidekick
else.
Was like Porky.
Yeah, it was like something that. Like that. Yeah. But yeah.
And Porky's a fucking idiot. But anyways. I think in Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels, there are some characters I wish had a little bit more screen time.
That's fair. Yeah.
Like sometimes they're just like Nick the Greek. I get he was the connection between.
Oh yeah.
The character. What's his name? Who's the lad with the afro?
The Lafro.
That's
a good question.
Rory Breaker. That was his name. He was the guy that at the bar that he set the other guy.
Oh, yeah,
fire.
That guy
was watching the game.
Dude,
he was hilarious. I wish he would have had more screen time.
Yeah, I could have watched a whole movie with that guy because he's unhinged.
I mean,
what was that quote? He said something about, if the milk is sour, I'm not the type of pussy to drink it.
Yeah.
I fucking love that quote.
It's a good one.
It's a quote for sure. The my thing with the characters in this movie, I don't remember who any of them were.
That's
like,
the other thing.
I know Vinny.
Yeah.
And I know Jason, and that's it. And that's not even their character names. I could not keep track of who all they were. And I know that, like, that's part of the style of the interwoven mm-hmm. narrative, but that's not normally an issue that I have with movies. Like, I'm able to keep track of character names, and I think that they just don't say them on screen all that often.
They don't.
So it doesn't stick.
That's the thing with Guy Ritchie movies, especially in Gentlemen.
I like The Gentlemen too, though.
The Gentlemen is great, but yeah. I'll put it in this perspective of just a general audience, like not, you know, film students like us who pay attention to small details and so forth. But, like, the general audience, I showed my parents The Gentlemen. They hated it. They thought it was very boring. They couldn't keep up with the characters. They didn't know who they were.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, then I showed them Wrath of a Man.
Oh, yeah, Wrath of a Man.
Oh, my God.
They love Wrath of a Man. My dad
was like, no, he was like, oh, this movie is the best. You know, you met my dad. Like, he'll like, say the short words. He'll just be like, oh, cool,
yeah,
cool,
man. He's not a conversationalist.
No.
But
no.
Lovely
but
person.
But he loves action. And Guy Ritchie's action. But it just depends, you know, if you want to get the general audience involved, it's got to be a much simpler, like, design of characters, not having too many in there.
I also think that there's a big problem I have with the characters, which I guess we're moving into cons at this point, is, like, there is no depth to any of them.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They're all surface level. But I don't necessarily know all their names for sure. But I
know Ed,
Bacon, right.
But those are the main characters that have the most screen time.
Correct. So when you were saying names earlier, I had to like look over to see who it was.
Mm-hmm.
But they're entertaining to me, but I know nothing about them. Like, they're all just whatever they've shown in the movie. It's all surface level. So
like the potheads.
Yeah.
The drug dealers. Do you remember their names?
No.
And they were in a good percentage of the movie.
Correct. So, yeah.
They definitely were. I think that thing with all these characters and there not being any development, I have only seen outside of this for Guy Ritchie, the two Sherlock Holmes films, Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Aladdin. I haven't seen anything else.
Oh,
okay. So, well, you said you haven't seen like Snatch.
No, the ones I just named is all I'd seen up until this point.
Snatch is definitely, in my opinion, it's his best.
Okay.
Sure. I probably agree with that.
It's his best.
But
I've seen that one the most.
The way that I was looking at it is like, if this is what the rest of his movies are more like in terms of tone, or at least in humor and the characters and the lack of development, I don't know if that's a thing in the rest of it, but I definitely didn't like that style in this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very reminiscent of like Matthew Vaughn to me.
Yeah.
And again, like, he's connected to it, but like, for
we
Matthew
didn't like
Vaughn,
Argyle,
I didn't like Argyle.
Yeah, we didn't
the
like
only
Argyle.
Matthew Vaughn movie I've seen and really liked was X-Men First Class.
Whoa. I like that one.
Yeah,
and which,
I don't know if that even counts as a Matthew Vaughn movie.
The first Kingsman movie is so good.
I don't know if I'd enjoy
the church
it
scene.
On,
was good. I like that one.
Oh,
but like,
yeah, the church scene's wild.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I didn't.
You
want to
see a wild church?
That's another
scene.
Good use of slow mo. That was a really good scene for that.
Here's the thing. Like, if you were to show me X-Men First Class and then show me Argyle and say that's directed by the same guy, I
don't think that First Class was, I wouldn't, if somebody was like, what is a Matthew Vaughn movie like, I would not point them to First Class.
No.
Yeah.
I would point them towards a Kick-Ass, or I'd point them towards
I forgot about
Kick-Ass.
Kingsman. He did Kick-Ass.
Like, I think his style is a lot like Guy Ritchie in like a lot of ways. But I think that Matthew Vaughn's more interested in characters than Guy Ritchie is.
I can agree with that, actually.
Is kind of where I'm at on it.
I want to circle back. If you want to see a crazy church scene, Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Okay,
oh,
I'm done.
Yes, dude.
I'm
done. I haven't seen that.
Dude, that movie's
Robert
awesome.
Rodriguez went crazy.
Robert Rodriguez is maybe a Guy Ritchie that I like.
A Guy Ritchie.
I said it.
I always say that, like, in a way that's completely different. Like, I always say that I defend Guy Ritchie for the same reasons that I diss Tim Burton. It's like, I like his style.
Oh.
And I think that Tim Burton has zero substance.
You don't like Tim Burton?
No, absolutely not. He has.
He made Batman. That's it.
I like
in
Batman.
In my eyes.
What do you mean that's it?
And I like Returns
Nightmare
as well.
Before Christmas, you didn't like?
No.
Oh, he didn't even direct that one.
No, he just produced that.
But.
Oh, he didn't.
The last movie of Tim Burton's that I like was Sweeney Todd.
Okay, that's
fair. Okay.
And then before that, it was in the 80s.
Okay, but, okay, and I know you guys, I know Brian especially. I've had this conversation with him before. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Mm. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is all that exists besides
Correct.
From Wonka.
Nope, Wonka doesn't exist.
I know
either.
You guys hate
Garbage.
That movie, but I love that movie.
Maybe we should do a Wonk episode on this podcast.
I watched it a lot of times as a kid.
Oh, heck no.
I will destroy Wonk on this podcast.
It's a world of your own.
Oh, my God.
Are you talking
That's
about
That's a lot of chocolate.
The Timothy Chalamet?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So, talk about characters who are just surface level.
No, but before we move on from the character topic, I was going to bring it back to whenever we watched the film, you pointed out that it reminded you of Tarantino as well, like kind of That's a true. Knockoff Pulp Fiction in some case.
I don't necessarily agree with knockoff. I think it's heavily inspired for sure, but I think it's definitely different.
I saw, like, somebody asked Guy Ritchie about that. They told him, like, how do you feel about critics calling it kind of, like, similar to Quentin Tarantino's work? And his response was just, I love it when they compare work to other filmmakers.
Yeah,
like,
as you would.
Yeah.
It's good. I love Quentin Tarantino, and I think his style is amazing, and I just, you know, maybe it is. It's part of a genre, he called it. And I agree with that. I wouldn't say, like, it's just...
It's not a ripoff, but again, it's heavily inspired by it, for sure.
I like it when people compare my work to filmmakers as well. So, like, I wouldn't be offended if someone said that about his work. Specifically...
Terrence Malick.
Over the summer, our professor Terry. Who oversaw our summer films last year, she said that Burger Night reminded her of George Lucas and Richard Linklater's earlier work.
Hearing George Lucas definitely made you happy.
Yes, she was talking about American Graffiti specifically.
And we're going to touch back on American Graffiti.
I call American Graffiti worst version of Dazed and Confused.
She compared it to that as well.
Yeah, that's much better. But that's okay.
But anyhow, I don't see it, but I accepted it and just ran with it.
Anyway.
So
can we talk about the color grading?
That was my next complaint, dude. I hated the color grade in this movie. It's terrible.
If you hate it in this one, I mean, Snatch is kind of similar.
It's similar in color, but I don't think it's nearly as egregious.
It's not as bad. Yes. Yeah. It's not as bad. I will agree with you on that. It's very, very green. And pale, like
I thought it was yellow. Yeah, but you're colorblind.
I am colorblind. Okay, so it's yellow.
Yeah, it's very yellow.
Damn.
For me, it doesn't ruin anything. Like the film for me, but at the same time, like if there is a big complaint, I think that is a totally fair one.
It looks very. I feel like people would say it's grainy. Like it looks very.
Yeah, but I think
the grain's from the film.
That's the stock.
Yeah, yes. That's the stock. Yeah,
like this, I think might have been shot on 16. I'm not sure.
This is also a really early, Blu-ray transfer of it.
That's true.
That was the other thing I was complaining about when we watched it. Mm-hmm. I said the sound wasn't how I remember it.
Right. Because I mean, it's definitely part of that.
Yeah.
Earlier Blu-rays were in 5.1, and the newer ones are in 7.1 or 2 usually. Yeah. So that's a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, the color grade, I couldn't get behind it. It made looking at the film physically painful for me.
Yeah, it didn't do that for me, but I definitely think that it's an issue in this.
Yeah.
And then kind of last kind of con that I have is, like, I think that at some points in the movie, I think the pacing was just slightly off. Like, I enjoyed the crisscrossing stories, but I think at certain points it did feel unbalanced with it.
There was an imbalance, and I will agree with you on the pacing. The first act is a good setup, and then I think towards the middle of the second act, just before they hit that that moment where they decide, oh, you know what, this is our plan, et cetera. I did feel like there was a bit of a moment where people would get bored, in my opinion.
I wouldn't say bored. I just think that it feels like you're standing still for a few minutes.
Yeah, it wasn't moving as fast as it was at the beginning. Yeah.
There's a lot of circular motion in this plot, and it's not even a long movie.
No.
Nope.
So.
It's definitely just like, this movie just feels like it's a first film.
Do you feel like it could have been longer?
I think that if it was longer, it probably should have focused more on one character or like one set of the group. Because again, I didn't feel attached to anyone. I feel like the four guys who have to repay the money are clearly the protagonists, right? But then they don't get as much screen time as you'd expect for a protagonist. So I think if it was longer, I would have just like expounded on their journey, perhaps.
Especially when they brought in, again, going back to Sting. His cameo in there. Mm-hmm. He plays the dad. You only see the dad, like, I feel like that relationship could have been, I guess, gone deeper into the plot.
Right. And that goes back to the characters. Like, they don't try to have anybody get from one place to another, like, any kind of development at all.
What was funny is that Matthew Vaughn, when they were producing this, he told Guy Ritchie it's too short, and Guy Ritchie actually said it was too long. So he would have made it shorter, which okay, I found kind of funny.
My final note, which I think I wrote down, I don't enjoy the humor in this for me personally. I thought a few of the jokes were funny, but
was it the accent?
No, I just didn't think it was funny.
If you don't like the humor here, I don't know that you're going to find much of his other, like, this kind
like
of
snatch.
I don't think you're going to find it.
I mean, I'll still watch it and rip it apart, but you
it's
know.
Definitely funnier than this one.
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, I want to see Snatched. I'm not denying that. Yeah. But the last thing I wrote down, because I wanted to get
Brad
that out.
Pitt's best role, in my opinion, which is
that's a
very
crazy
hot take.
Yeah, that's a crazy take. But,
yeah. Brad Pitt's best role is, it's when he wrote himself in to 12 Years a Slave as the guy who gets him out.
Definitely not.
He's like, I'm the nice Canadian.
What would you say is his best role? Really quick.
I go back and forth on it, but right now I'm at Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I just rewatched
this recently.
Yeah. It's a great character, don't
and
get me wrong.
He's so good in it.
I love it. Yeah, yeah, he's great
he's
in
no
it.
Leo.
Of course he deserved the Oscar.
But I'm also a person who's like, he doesn't normally blow me away when I see him on screen for the most part. That's my opinion on it. Like, I think he's good, but I rarely leave it going, man.
He was good in The Big Short.
Yeah.
That is a very underrated role of his, because I love that movie, of course. Like, it's
my favorite
10,
Brad Pitt role is Tree of Life.
I knew you were going to say that.
Oh, my God.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it.
But, okay, so speaking of that, I think Tree of Life has a similar, it's not the same issue, but I feel
it
like...
a lot of issues.
Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels. It felt like a student film that was already kind of like a student short film that was a bit mediocre that got extended into a feature as opposed to like a feature from the beginning.
He did make a short film. It was called Hard Case. And then when he made that short film, he was able to get he met Matthew Vaughn, and then he got like money for it.
So then that makes sense. But my...
What and the short film didn't have any of the actors, if I'm not mistaken. I watched a little bit of it earlier today, and Bacon was played by some guy I never have seen in my life. So
yeah, and I mean, it just feels like he took that like a pretty short story and like expanded it in a not as satisfying way. Because like, if you were to take all the scenes with the main cast, like the four guys, condense that into a short film, it'd probably be what, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Well,
I think
that's my point.
I think the ending would be better. It would fit better in that like formula, because
exactly
it is very much there is no real payoff in this, you know? Like, everything comes together and it's fine, but like, everybody's exactly where they were when it started except for the people that are dead.
Right.
There's one character who's better off, but like, for the most part, I wouldn't call it a satisfying ending.
It's a funny ending. Though.
It's definitely funny.
Because, you know, he gives them, what was his name again? Big Chris. He gives them the money.
Right.
And he says, like, fuck off. Like,
I don't want to do
it. It's been emotional.
And then they open it. It's like, there's nothing in the bag.
There's nothing in the
bag.
Oh,
there is something in the bag.
But he gave them the guns. And the guns were worth how much, like, $200,000 each?
Yeah, yeah. Or no, as a set. They were like $300,000, yeah.
Yeah, and then,
he's like going
to
toss them
off
the bridge.
One of the idiots, decided to toss it off.
But it definitely feels like, I don't know, when you get to the end of the movie, I don't know. It's not as satisfying as I'd like it to be.
It didn't pay off for me.
It's not as satisfying as Snatch. Snatch has a satisfying
ending. Well, we're not talking about Snatch.
This one I also do. I also didn't remember being as let down by the ending as I was this time. Like, on a rewatch, I was like...
I was kind of... I'm not going to lie. This was my third time watching it. And after my third time watching it, I was kind of like,
Yeah.
It was funny, but yeah.
It's kind of like when one of our dear professors here like might criticize my writing for not leading to the most satisfying punchline. Like Burger Night, it's like they throw them off of a balcony. Like that was it, you know? And I agree with him, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that that's a similar complaint to this almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, any other final thoughts on it before we go into ratings?
I feel like I've covered everything I wanted to talk about.
Amazing.
I think I've covered everything.
Out of 5 stars, where are we at?
I would give this one a We can go decimals, right? Like,
yeah, you can do point fives.
Just point fives?
Yeah.
Yeah. Out of five, but you can do point fives.
Yeah.
Damn, that's hard. I was going to give it like a 0.1, 0.2, you know.
Like, no.
He's like, I got a 100-point system. Yeah.
I can't.
Someone in our cohort does have a 100-point system and rates every movie on it.
I can't. It's too much. It's too much pressure.
Anyhow. I wouldn't do a 100-point system. I'm just saying, like, I would, you know.
I actually don't know, but there are definitely markers that they talk about. So
I'll give it, if we're going based off of that, I would give this film a 3 or a 2. See, that's the thing. I would give it like a 2.7.
Yo, you're crazy low on this. That's crazy.
Did you say 2.5?
Like a 3 and 2.75, but like 3. Well, I'll give
I'm
it a 3.
I'm at 2.5 personally. That's where I fell.
Okay, so apparently I'm the highest on this. What's yours? 3.5. And I'm like,
see, for me, Snatch is a 4. Okay. Snatch is a 4.
I'd give Snatch 4.5. Like, I really like Snatch.
I like it too, but...
But I also have a different... movie. My rating system is also, like, different for each style of movie that I'm watching.
Yeah, so
like
he's not consistent.
I don't have a consistent, like, I rate every movie on the same scale. No.
Yeah. Like, for me, 2.5 out of 5 means I thought it was okay, but I probably won't watch it again. That's what this means.
Okay, well, for me, I definitely... I wouldn't say I would watch this as much as I would watch his other work all over again. Like, The Gentleman, I've seen many, many times. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, The Gentleman's so much
fun. So I'll give this a 3. But that's the thing, too. Something that gets audiences is that I've noticed is the whole narrator type of thing. Like, whenever they introduce the characters, and sorry, this is kind of tying back to what we were talking about earlier, but, like, whenever he introduces the characters in his movies, like, some of his movies, of course, there's that narrator voice that, like, goes through and is like, this is Viking, like, you know.
Right. I like the way he does it in The Gentleman a lot, actually. Like, I like the way he uses the narrator.
Hugh Grant is the narrator in that one. And
but, yeah, like that one's fun, for sure. I would put that one up there. Like, it's between this. So it's like Snatch, The Gentleman, and then this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was fun to talk about that, guys. Thank you for recommending it, Carl. That was, like, very great.
We'll watch Snatch some other time. We'll come back and talk
about it. But, yeah, so if you would like to follow me and Landon, at least, on Letterboxd, our... usernames are down in the description. Carlos, you should really get Letterboxd.
You should.
No,
you
can I leave, don't think I'm ever going to budge on that.
Leave it.
Wow.
Leave the reviews, man. You can see what everyone's watching.
See, I don't like to waste my time and write a whole paragraph.
I don't. I don't write anything. I do like one-word reviews.
So you just put like, good.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll say it slaps so hard it knocked me unconscious. Stuff like that. I use it to keep track of when I watch stuff.
Right. I just use it as a log.
Yeah,
I don't really use it.
And I lost it because I had left it on my undergrad email under that. I had made a list of like 500 films I had seen. And see, I lost the whole thing. And
Now, I highly recommend you get it. Don't do reviews, just do logging. That's what most people do.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, look down in the description. Yeah. You can see it. If Carlos ever gets an account, I will add a link to it there.
I will.
We're going to move into our top 5 list of the day, which is heavily inspired by one of the things that we all loved in Lock, Stock, which is the needle drops. So we're going to be talking about our top 5 needle drops from movies in general. Did you have any honorable mentions, Carlos?
Ooh.
If not.
Honorable?
Yeah. Like, there are ones that just didn't make the list.
I actually didn't think about that. I only went for my list.
Yeah. That's fine.
Although I will say Guy Ritchie's an honorable mention because he didn't make my list.
Okay.
But his films do have...
We'll just say Lock, Stock was your honorable mention.
Oh, no. Movie-wise? Like, specifically? Like...
Yeah.
Probably The Gentleman. The Gentleman had a...
Yeah, that's good.
Killer soundtrack, yeah.
I went with very specific moments, but I had a list earlier of about 25 moments. And So I narrowed it down to... I ended up actually having 6 on my main list, but I'll get to why in a second. But, no, my honorable mentions was... Rags to Riches from Goodfellas, Tony Bennett song. Also from Goodfellas, Layla by Derek and the Dominoes. Don't Stop Me Now and Shaun of the Dead.
Don't stop.
That goes so hard.
Cause I'm having a good time.
Obviously by Queen. And then Eye of the Tiger from Rocky III, because that's iconic.
I think Eye of the Tiger was written.
I completely forgot. And it was also,
it might have been.
It was in Rocky IV.
Yeah.
I completely forgot about Goodfellas. You were so right about that one.
I wanted to put it on my list, but these other ones, I'm like, I couldn't leave it all.
No, it is Rocky III. Sorry.
Yeah, it was in Rocky III. Shout out to Survivor.
I have two honorable mentions. One is just a movie in general. I feel like every week we have a Ridley Scott film on these lists.
We had to.
Listen,
so we're very like harsh critics of Ridley Scott.
But I love his movies. I can't deny
it. But his high end is very high and his low end is kind
of
low.
So I have
a picture of him. This is off topic, but did you see that picture of him standing outside of his house trying to get in when they were raiding P. Diddy's house?
Yeah.
It's so funny.
It was so fucking hilarious.
So I have The Martian.
Oh.
Because okay. ABBA is like in the soundtrack pretty constantly because the laptop that's left behind, the only music on it is ABBA. So then for the rest of the movie, Matt Damon's just listening to ABBA. Yeah. Huh. It's a whole thing. And then this one,
remember ABBA.
I don't know if this really counts, but in my opinion, it's like one of the most hardcore needle drops of all time.
Okay.
Remember that scene? We watched it together in 2018, the week of May 25th. Han Solo is running away and he is, you know, it's the scene where he's like, I don't have any friends. I'm all alone. He goes, oh, so you're solo. But if you pay attention to the back of the scene on the screen in the recruitment video for the Empire, the Imperial March is playing, which means that the Imperial March exists inside of Star Wars and it became diegetic in this moment. And so, to me, that is a hardcore needle drop.
All right. I mean, you can have it.
But that's why it's an honorable mention, is because I don't know if it counts. Yeah, it would be number one.
All right.
Would be. All right. Well, now we can start from number five. You go first.
From number five?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, we're not at honorable mentions.
No.
Okay.
Or do you have an honorable mention? Because I don't know if you said anything.
I had one in mind, but then it just went away.
Okay.
Oh, no. Yeah, because, well, first I have to hear y'all's list. But I don't think any of us are going to cover this because it's kind of a basic answer. I was going to say James Gunn in Guardians of the Galaxy. Like,
you may be surprised.
Okay.
Oh, so you do have.
No.
Okay. No. Because it's a pretty basic answer because, like, whenever that soundtrack came out, it was just number one.
Like, the whole sound. I think, yeah, that's why I didn't list it, is because the Awesome Mix was the soundtrack of my summer that year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's fun. I can't really put it there.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I had some James Gunn stuff on my honorable mentions, like not honorable mentions, but like on my list. And I just like was like, all this other stuff I like much more. But
yeah.
For me, it's so my number five, Pulp Fiction.
Mm.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino. Specifically, Al Green, Let's Stay Together, whenever Marcellus is giving his speech about pride. That's, yeah.
Oh. Tarantino has some really good needle drops. And I do feel bad because one of them probably could have made this list and just didn't. Particularly Reservoir Dogs, I think, has a really cool one.
That's fair.
Which one? The torture scene?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To
the left. Here I am.
Stuck in the middle. Yeah, it's like, but it's an iconic scene. But no, that's a good one. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
You want me to go next?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my number five is from Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Ooh.
And it is the scene where they're in the car driving, and they're just, like, cruising down the highway listening to Heroes by David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, Emma Watson gets out of the car. She's just got her hands in the air. I'm like, this is a vibe. So this is just, like, I could see me doing something like this, just, like, cruising down the highway listening to Heroes. Goes hard.
I do that sometimes. My number five is Paint It Black from Full Metal Jacket.
Okay, yeah.
But also it appears in Westworld and a few other things. I really love... It was in Black Adam. We're not going to count that.
That scene was the best scene of the movie. That movie sucked, but...
I have not seen Black Adam.
When Paint It Black came on, I was actually, like, intrigued.
Black Adam's theme was an orchestral version of Paint It Black, actually. But I really liked the way it was used in Full Metal Jacket, so... bringing that up. All right. On to number four.
Number four. I wouldn't say it's just one song in particular, but the whole soundtrack of Waves from 2019. I don't know if you guys have heard of that.
Yes.
It's an A24 film. It was written and directed by Trey Edward Schultz. The soundtrack includes everyone of my favorite artists, like Tyler, the Creator, Frank Ocean, of course, Kanye, I know that maybe.
That movie wrecked me.
That movie is...
Like, when you get to the halfway point, and, like, you know what the halfway... I don't want to spoil it. If you haven't seen the movie, go watch it.
Yeah.
But when you get to the point where the movie shifts,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, okay, this is what we're doing today.
And it's crazy when you look at the soundtrack, and I was reading more into it, like how he was able to get all of these songs, because all of these songs are, like, insane. He had songs from Blonde on
right.
there. He had, like, one of the best soundtracks ever, in my opinion. And he just had to go through a lot of, you know, obstacles to get that done. And, of course, a lot of miscommunications were done as well. But he even shot the scene whenever they're freestyling, or they're singing along to Backstreet Freestyle, the Kendrick Lamar song. He said they shot it with the song, and he said if Kendrick didn't approve of it, they would just cut the moment, but he didn't want to cut it, which was just what he did for most of the film, honestly.
That I totally forgot that. Yeah, I do remember that scene now, but I'm not surprised Kendrick was like, yeah, it's fine, go ahead.
Yeah.
Kendrick seems cool.
He seems like
that.
A chill guy.
Unless you're Drake.
Frank Ocean only let it go. He was only going to clear one, but of course he cleared, you know, all. Yeah. I think it was four songs that he had, but after he saw a rough cut of the film.
Yeah. So
that's my number four.
My number four, and completely change of pace here, is from Baby Driver. And it is.
Fuck.
It is Bell Bottoms.
Yes. No, Bell that's bottom. On my list.
I think that this is Bell a perfect bottoms. Like needle drop because it sets up the movie so well. Like it shows you what the movie's going to be like. But also it's just a really fun opening sequence for this like heist movie.
I want to give a little shout out to my old college roommate, Donald Wu. Him and I, we watched that movie together, and that was like the song that we were always jamming out to.
Yeah. Bell Bottoms goes way too hard.
Miss you, Donald.
Shout out, Donald. I don't know you, but shout out.
My number four is a song that got me into the subgenre known as rap metal.
Oh.
I was exposed to it in the year 2012.
Oh, Lord.
When I finally saw the 2009 science fiction film Star Trek by J.J. Abrams.
I knew.
And that song is Sabotage by the Beastie Boys.
Yep, I knew it was coming.
I love Sabotage. That song, it goes way too hard. And it's actually why I have six needle drops in my top five list, because it happens again in Star Trek Beyond.
Nice. Okay.
But no, I think it's a fun song, and like the way it's used is hilarious. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Well, my number three, and this one's going to be kind of meh, I feel like. But to me, it's, again, one of the best soundtracks ever made. Black Panther.
Oh, yeah.
Made by Kendrick.
Kendrick went stupid on that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Weeknd song in that is good, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pray for You?
Mm-hmm.
Pray for Me. I think that's one. Now, my favorite song off of that one is Paramedic by SOBXRB. Shout out to those guys.
I'd like to see Kendrick do more like soundtrack stuff like that, because I think it did add like a whole other layer to that. That I listened to that soundtrack regularly still. Mm-hmm. So, what are you laughing at?
I just came up with the joke for later. You'll hear it.
Okay. Oh, all right. So, my number three is from Royal Tenenbaums, one of my favorite Wes Anderson movies.
I think I know.
Wait. Needle in the Hay.
Is that the one where it's the slow motion shot whenever they're on the train?
No, that was also on my short list. I decided not to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
This one is the one where, I don't want to spoil anything for the movie, but a character is...
Yeah, I still haven't seen this one.
...is potentially trying to maybe commit suicide. But no, this is a... I really love this scene. It's an Elliott Smith song, so you know it's going to be real sad. Mm-hmm. But... Yeah, and then it also plays with it being like diegetic versus non-diegetic. So it's also just interesting how he worked with it. So that's my number three.
So this one, I realized after I looked at this, it kind of slipped into just being like mainstream movies that I really adore. But we've already brought up this franchise earlier, or at least I did. Time in a Bottle from X-Men Days of Future Past.
Oh, yeah, that's
the scene where Quicksilver is running around.
Iconic.
That scene's amazing. I really like the second scene with him where it's Eurythmics, but this one goes a lot harder. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really good choice.
All right.
It's a standout scene.
My number two, you kind of stole.
Oh, sorry.
But I wasn't going to go with Bell Bottoms.
Okay.
I was actually going to go with, it's two, okay? I was going to go with, I think it's called Hocus Pocus.
Oh, yeah.
By Focus. Okay. Yeah. Wait, I think it's that chase scene whenever Jamie Foxx is now in the scene. I love that scene a lot. Also, Deborah.
They're at the laundromat.
Yeah.
I think you could really pick any of them in Baby Driver. Like, Easy Like Sunday Morning even goes hard in that movie.
I actually didn't like that one.
What?
Yeah, when he's walking out, dude. It was kind of, eh.
Dude, that's crazy.
Well, it's because his mom's singing it.
Well, his mom's version is okay, but, like, when he's walking out of the junkyard and just singing along to it, I was like, eh.
I like that one a lot.
It reinforces it for me on rewatch, where I'm like, that's the importance of it. But anyways. Yeah,
but there's not much. You can't go wrong with any of them in Baby Driver.
No.
Baby Driver, I didn't want to touch because I figured one of y'all would grab it, so I'm glad you did.
Oh, it's my turn, isn't it?
Yep, it is.
So my number two, I actually picked two because I refused to pick one. I was doing one filmmaker per list, so I have two Paul Thomas Anderson ones.
I know what one of them is.
Licorice Pizza.
Yes, because that one, okay, so yes, from Licorice Pizza. So the first one is from Magnolia, and it's called Wise Up by Amy Mann. Uh-huh. And this is just a scene where, like, a bunch of characters are hitting, like, a really low point, and then they all just start singing this song that they hear on the radio. And it gets me every time. It wrecks me. I get chills every time I see that scene. I was rewatching it in the library, and I was, like, sitting there trying not to cry in front of everybody who was, like, around me. Mm-hmm. It's so good. But then anybody who was around during this era of me working at the theater will know that Let Me Roll It from Licorice Pizza is probably up there as one of the greatest needle drops of all time. That scene on the waterbed is, like, ingrained in my memory.
And you know what? We got to see it live.
We did. Paul McCartney crushed it. I was so happy he sang it because I would have been really upset.
I turned around and your face was just lit up. It was awesome.
It was Paul McCartney and Wings. Just, you know.
I think they knew who it was.
I just wanted to make sure. but yeah, Let Me Roll It goes way too hard. And then that scene just gets me every time. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. I've actually seen Licorice Pizza, which is crazy.
Did we watch it together?
No. I didn't work at the theater back then. Or at that
I point. Watched it with Shannon. We went to Greensboro to watch it. So shout out to Shannon.
Two
weeks in a row, you're getting a shout out.
Yeah. We should just start shouting him out every week. Yeah. My number two is from a 2022 action film directed by Matt Reeves. And it is Something God, in the Way no by Nirvana way. In the
yes,
Batman.
Finally.
And here's
dude.
The thing. I think that this song really does wonders for Bruce Wayne's character development, but most importantly,
making him emo.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an emo boy. I wish that, like, Nirvana can, like, do more soundtracks, you know?
That's
that was the joke. Okay,
that's a bad
you're
joke.
Welcome.
That's
a bad joke. Really bad joke. It was pretty bad. It would have been funnier if you hadn't have said that and I was just being completely oblivious, but I'm not even a big Nirvana fan, but I love how the song's used.
I liked how it was used, but I just hated that that was the only reason why it was, like, people were actually playing that song. Like, they suddenly discovered who Nirvana was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that I find that annoying with, like, literally anything. Like, in pop culture, I'm a person that generally just knows about stuff. Like, a lot of needle drops I didn't mention here because of how niche they are.
Yeah.
Like random rom-coms where I discovered an indie band that I will be seeing in May, for example. But, you know, this one I just really enjoy as well. So yeah. I get you.
Okay, now we're at number one.
Yeah, what you got?
Can I go back to my honorable mention real quick? I just thought of one.
Yeah,
Top Gun, Take My Breath Away.
Okay, yeah.
You had to mention that one. You have to. Okay, so number one. Here's the thing. This list isn't in order. I don't have an order for these. But whenever we went to the theater to go watch American Graffiti, like, dude, I fell in love with that soundtrack.
That's a great soundtrack.
It's a great soundtrack.
Beautiful soundtrack. And I love the movie, too. But Runaway, Del Shannon. Oh, my God. When they're cruising on the streets. Yeah.
Yeah. Now the whole thing.
I wish I would have lived at that time. Was it the 60s?
Yeah. 1962.
Yeah.
60s. Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. I mean, Vietnam happened.
You know. No, yeah, but just driving
around. It's a hard pass for me.
I mean, but we would have gotten to discover the Beatles when it was happening. So that would be cool.
Yeah, but, you know, now we get to look back on the Beatles and be like, that was cool.
Yeah, that's true.
We get to see Paul McCartney live.
Harrison Ford almost died.
Crazy. Yeah. Dude, imagine if he killed Harrison Ford.
Bro, that'd be weird.
Okay. So my number one is from Chungking Express. You haven't even seen the movie, okay?
I don't care.
It's California Dreamin' by the Mamas and Papas. It's kind of
California Dreamin' was close to making my list, but from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay. Well, Tarantino is a massive fan of Chungking Express.
That is true.
And that's definitely probably part of that.
And I'm just kidding about my disdain of Wong Kar Wai. You know that I own In the Mood for Love on the Criterion
You
collection.
Do.
Oh, yeah. That was also about to be on my list with Nat King Cole.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Nat King Cole.
And again, I could have.
Why is that funny?
I could have put a multiple
it's
different.
It's the weirdest gag gift I've ever received. Landon gave me In the Mood for Love because I didn't like it.
Yeah. Well, because I refuse to let him not like it. So he's going to have to rewatch it with me at some point because I bought it for him and it was $40.
Whoa. Watch it with you?
Yeah.
You can come.
Yeah, you got to be there too.
All right. Yeah, you're involved now.
All right. Say that.
And I guess, Ben, if you ever listen, you're invited too.
Yeah, definitely.
He won't listen.
Wow. No, he won't.
That's okay.
Zach might tell him, but that's fine.
Yeah, Zach.
We're just shouting out everyone this week.
All right, man.
My number one is a film from 2004 that I saw in 2005 when I was 6 years old. It's a film that most of my personality is based around, the main character at least.
Okay.
The song is from, I think, the 1960s or 70s. I'm not entirely sure. It's a very peaceful ukulele bit. And the song is called Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head by BJ Thomas. As many people know, I went by BJ up until 2020 because those are my initials. And the film.
I still call him that.
Is Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2.
Raindrops.
I thought he was going to say Raindrop Drop Top.
No, me too.
No, that's like one of my favorite songs ever, but it's because of that movie.
Is that when Peter's eating the sandwich?
The hot dog, yeah.
The hot dog, yeah.
Yeah. Which some people would consider a sandwich.
Hot dogs are not a sandwich.
We're not going to get into this
right now. Into that.
And I don't really care one way or the other, but I'm saying some people do consider it that.
Yeah, you're looking at one right now.
You consider it a sandwich. Yeah, that's right.
No.
Dude, there are just so many needle drops like that are amazing. Yeah. I can't do a list of top five. Cars, Life is a Highway.
I do think this is a possibility of
it was a cover.
Of there needs to be a part two of this because I have so many that I want to talk about that I just couldn't.
Next week we come back. Honestly, one of the greatest covers of all time is the Nine Inch Nails song Hurt when performed by Johnny Cash.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was our attempt at a top five.
Yeah, one more attempt here.
All right, let's go ahead. Let's hear it.
This is my actual number one. Well, he wrote it though. I don't think it's a needle drop actually. I was gonna say the Moon Song, Spike Jones, Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that I'd call that a.
Because he wrote it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
If it was made for the movie, I don't know if I'd count it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Never mind then.
But we allow it.
I love you, Spike Jones.
But yeah.
Shout out Spike Jones.
I don't think there's a way to do a list of these on Letterboxd, so that's kind of a first time as well.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah, that was our top five needle drops. So, now for the fun discussion of what we've been watching. I can go first on this, or you can. I wrote it down. So, I've been catching up on Curb Your Enthusiasm Season 12. There's only one episode left, and then the entire series is over.
Good.
It's very upsetting for me. I've been catching up on Bad Batch Season 3, and they've been doing some really gnarly crap. Some major retcons, and...
We love to hear it.
Yeah, basically, Asajj Ventress, she's back. So
okay, spoilers.
You should go watch it.
Bro, just gonna drop a spoiler like that.
It's not a spoiler.
Feels like it.
It's only halfway through the season, so it's not really a spoiler.
Okay, I haven't watched one episode.
Oh, well, that sounds like a you problem. I watched It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia Season 1 in one sitting the other
Pearson
night.
Pearson and Seppes would be so happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, it's fun.
I've shown them some episodes before.
Shout out Pierce and Seppes, by the way.
Love and then guys. Today, after Pierce almost hit me with the golf cart, I went to work, and one of the students I work with, he was watching Get Out for class, right? So in class, they were watching Get Out. He just like walks up to me and goes, Brian, have you ever seen Get Out? And I was like, of course I've seen Get Out. And he goes, we're watching it, and I just don't know what happens next, man. And he was like...
he almost hit you with a golf cart. I'm sorry, man.
That's funny. We'll circle back. Yeah. But anyway, so I ended up watching the last half hour of Get Out with him. Mm-hmm. What's up?
6:50.
Okay, we got to get out soon. Okay,
that's fine. We real got quick. 9 minutes. We can get out in 30 seconds. No big deal. Sorry.
Get out!
Yeah, yeah. Okay, what I've been watching. Well, after this, I have to go. I wouldn't say I haven't been watching much lately, other than my contemporary French cinema class, the stuff I watch in there. But I am going to dive deep into the Gaspar Noé filmography. So
that's what you've been talking about a lot recently. Yes. I feel like every time I see you, you bring it up at least once.
Bro, so I love the guy.
The way that you feel about Gaspar Noé is how I feel about Terrence Malick.
I just keep talking about him, dude. And I've only seen one of his films. Like, I'm ready to watch everything.
Was it Climax?
Yep.
Yeah.
Climax was phenomenal.
Yeah. I've only watched one movie since we watched Batman vs Superman, and that was it's Marianne and Julian in my German cinema class. Hmm. It's about two sisters who are on the opposite ends of, like, not necessarily a political spectrum because they're both, like, left-leaning, but one of them is a militant left-leaning person. So she's, you know, planting bombs, and her sister's basically having to clean up her own mess.
Are y'all going to watch any Fritz Lang in your German
class? We have. Yeah. We watched M and Metropolis. I really like Metropolis a lot. Metropolis
is good. I think I actually enjoyed M more than Metropolis, but that's...
I didn't, but that actually kind of is a lot of the same reasons I didn't... I think I have problems with Lock, Stock. There's not one particular protagonist.
Yeah.
It shifts so many times during the movie.
I agree.
But Metropolis is really good. They're both really good. Watch both of them.
I do hope you guys get to watch The Blue Angel.
We did. I'm halfway writing a paper on that.
I love that movie so much.
Yeah, I'm writing it on...
It's probably one of my favorite.
Yeah, The Blue Angel and then Lola.
I'm too much of an MFA to know what you're talking about.
It's okay.
You've never seen The Blue Angel?
But I've been playing a lot of MLB The Show. And then I've been knocking out some reading that I've been doing. So,
yeah.
That's kind of what I've been doing recently.
I bought the novel that Metropolis is based on, and I intend on reading it, but that's kind of neither here nor there. Anyways, I think that we're literally out of time in the studio, so that worked out pretty well. As always, you can follow us at TIWWMPod on TikTok and Instagram, and then me and Landon's handles for Letterboxd, I always forget that for some reason, is down in the description, so you can look at that. And of course, Carlos, we're hoping and praying that you join us on Letterboxd.
I won't. Keep praying.
I will. So we'll see you in the next one.
I appreciate you guys having me on.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for coming out.
I was going to give a shout out to my mom and dad and be like, Buenas noches, mom. Buenas noches, pa.